This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vedashevsky.
This is the Inch Podcast, recorded Tuesday, November 3rd, 2009. My name is Joe Gladyszewski. Special, kind of a brief podcast here. Just wanted to check in on one of the big stories going on in college hockey this week, which is, of course, shootout procedure in the CCHA regarding Friday's game between Nebraska-Omaha and Bowling Green. Many of you know the story. We'll recap it here in a sec, but first want to introduce the other podcast participants. CCHA senior writer James V. Dowd is on the podcast to help us talk about these things. Hello, James.
How are you, Gladdy?
Doing well. Doing well. A lot of news out of your league so far this season.
Yeah, it's been a busy season. Happy to be on the podcast finally.
Yeah, it's good. We'll look forward to talking to you. And Inch editor and columnist Mike Idlebus. Bus, how's it going?
It is going. Crazy weekend in the CCHA, and looks like this coming weekend, which we'll also talk about, could be just as crazy.
Yeah, for maybe some more positive news, but
yes,
three very exciting series, and I'm excited about what I've seen from a lot of the CCHA teams so far. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's start with Friday's game in Omaha, which ended in regulation and after the five-minute overtime period with the teams tied 3-3. This is, again, it's Bowling Green and Nebraska-Omaha. Key player in this situation is Jordan Samuels Thomas of Bowling Green. He scored a power play goal actually early in the third period that tied the game at 2-2. And then he also scored in the shootout, which was the decisive extra standings point, came off his stick. The problem that came to light after the game had concluded, after the teams had left the ice, was that Samuels Thomas was ineligible to participate in the shootout. He had been assessed a two-minute minor for roughing with 16 seconds left in overtime. Also should be noted that Nebraska-Omaha had two players, Eddie Del Grosso and Matt Ambrose, assessed two-minute minors at the same time that period. Del Grosso matching roughing minors with Samuels Thomas and Matt Ambrose, too, for charging. The on-ice referees, Derek Burkbile and Steven McInchak, didn't catch the fact that Samuels Thomas should not have been able to participate in the shootout due to the fact that he was still serving a minor penalty when overtime concluded. On Saturday, the CCHA released a statement basically saying that we acknowledge an error was made, but if an error in judgment takes place, that's not something that can be protested or overturned by the league office, which is their protocol. Now, in discussing this with some other folks, including Mike and James, started to talk about solutions, and Bus, I know you feel that there was a way they could have solved this and maybe gotten to a more beneficial outcome for everyone. Why don't you start with that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, first of all, I think the CCHA deserves credit for coming out and, you know, dealing with it. And, you know, the, they didn't let it linger. They got to the bottom of it and had an answer for the teams, you know, the following day, which is you know, really pretty remarkable. That said, I think that in my mind, you know, the CCHA said it was an error in judgment, but you know, I think this is a correctable error. I think this is something where, you know, a situation, it was a Friday night game, the teams come back the next day, before you start the game, shootout, and do it properly, with the guys who are ineligible to shoot, obviously not taking part. I think that, the biggest misgiving about this entire thing is that,
You think it could have been remedied?
I think it could have definitely been handled. So, you know, they chose to say, well, this is how we're going to deal with it. You know, I think had to do and not with, I guess, you know, the integrity of the game.
Yeah. One thing I went to, James, was, you know, what about the precedent that it sets? You know, if, you know, then if other mistakes, officiating mistakes, protocol mistakes are made throughout the course of the season, what happens then? You know, like, can we replay every game? You know, do you get into that situation? And sure, it would have been an easier solution with, you know, because the two teams were coming back to play Saturday night the next night. But let's say you try to schedule this replay for the next time they meet, which is in February, and one of the team's starting goalies is out with injury that night. You know, does that – I don't think that gets to the point where you get all of the I think the game needs to be self-inclusive. You know, on that night, the points have to be awarded.
Yeah, I mean, the CCHA kind of had a rule in place to deal with something like this, and what it said was that after the game's over, after the conclusion of the game, it's not something they were going to review. And, you know, I definitely think there's merit to both arguments. One, if you say that an ineligible player can compete at some point, or, well, they're not explicitly saying that, but you allow the ineligible, I guess, indirectly allow the ineligible player to compete in the shootout and give Bowling Green the credit for winning the game and using the ineligible player, you know, what's going to happen when there's, you know, a different case of something like that? I think Buss in earlier conversations in that used the example of somebody had been had a hit from behind and then the league went back and reviewed that and suspended the guy, but they played a week in between, or played a midweek game or something where he was in there. You know, do you go back and take that player's statistics out? And, you know, how do you take out intangible things? A shootout goal is something easy you can go back and take out and say, okay, well, Samuels Thomas wasn't allowed to be out there. His shootout attempt doesn't compute. But then if you get something that's, a little more gray, there's a little more gray area there. Where do you draw the line? Because what can you say? You know, maybe a defenseman that hits somebody from behind and then gets retroactively suspended. You know, you might not be on the score sheet. It might not be something explicit, but just his positioning on the ice and the way he plays something can have an effect on the outcome of the game. If there's, I think it's interesting, and it's a tough question, but I think the CCHA, you know, they acted in the way that their rule that they had already established said that they should act, so.
Yeah, I think it's an unfortunate outcome for Nebraska-Omaha, but I also think that they had 65 minutes of hockey, in which they outshot Bowling Green, like, 46-20 that night, you know, and...
And three attempts at a shootout.
And three of their own shooters, yeah. So, I don't know. It's a point in the standings, and I know it's easier, certainly in October or early November, to say, well, it's just a point, but as was documented in some of the articles I read about this, and great job in the Omaha World Herald this week, I thought, breaking down this story after it came to be, with quotes from their new athletic director, Trev Alberts, which we mentioned in the first shift segment or column that we posted on every Monday night at Inch. So, good job by them. But I think, yeah, you gotta go with what the rule book says. I don't think you can start making stuff up in season. So,
no, I think that's a good point. How often do you think that something like this has happened? At any level of hockey, where a shootout is used to determine a tie, I can't say that I've ever heard of it happening before, but I go back and yeah, it is. You think right now it's only 1 point, and you don't know how that might affect, you know, either of these teams down the road, obviously.
Or teams they may or may not have been tied with.
Right. That's exactly right. But I thought, you know, and I get the argument of each game being in and of itself, but to me, if an error is made and it can be corrected, then you should correct it. That's kind of my argument. But you know what? I commend the CCHA for dealing with it swiftly and decisively. Don't necessarily agree with how it was resolved, but that, you know, really put a period on it, and that's it.
Yeah, their quick action was commendable for sure. And they went to what they have to go with. You know, they went to the league bylaws, and that's why you have those types of things.
Exactly.
To legislate you in times when things may have gone a little bit wrong. So, good job, CCHA office. Good job, I think all around. And also of note, the two game referees in Friday's game were not assigned for Saturday's game. So they did have some sort of reaction toward the officials in that game.
Well, you know, I know that the CCHA kind of made it clear they weren't going to acknowledge publicly what the penalty would be. What do you guys think about reviewing referees who make that decision? You know, don't have that kind of realization in the course of a game. I mean, I know from talking with Steve Petrowski in the past, like, they're constantly reviewing referees and their performance and things like that. What do you guys think is the adequate response for the referees, and or is it something that, you know, is just as equally on the coaches who didn't notice that this was going on at the time when it was happening?
Well, I think one of the problems is that they keep changing the rules. I mean, it's kind of a new thing for the CCHA. The NCAA has been involved now at the summer meetings, suggesting protocol, suggesting procedure, and what are we following, what aren't we following. Most of the shootout rules that we know are from watching NHL games, because that's where we're exposed to it most often. And, you know, I was at an American Hockey League game and last year and found out they had 5 shooters instead of 3. You know, so I'm not saying the referee should get a pass. I'm saying, oh, sorry, I didn't know the rules, because that is their job. But I think that having clarity is a big thing. And we're going to make some found on a cocktail napkin that runs congruent to this, parallel to this podcast. You know, we're kind of doing this podcast as a CCHA thing and to talk about these issues, but we've got some jokes about this as well. So I think that's where that comes into play. But you just got to know the rules. I think these guys will work games again in the league this year.
I mean, McKinchak's been around for a while. You know, he's worked a lot of games that I've been at, so
right.
I don't think he's going to get thrown under the bus totally. But
well, there's four guys too. The ARs. Yeah. Somebody's got to step up. Or the official scorer. Why aren't they hitting the horn? They've got the score sheet there.
You know, I was just thinking too. You know, I mentioned
there's,
you know,
it's 10 guys that could have made a stop to this.
Yeah, is it something that, you know, the coaches should have noticed, or is it their responsibility? It's interesting to note too, not only are the rules constantly changing in the shootout, especially around the shootout, these guys are both new to this league this year. I guess Dennis Williams has been around before this, but, you know, he's young in his first head coaching job, what he describes as his dream job, you know, on trying to win every point he can get, trying to save the program, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's also new, you know, being in the CCHA and being around shootouts in college hockey is new to Dean Blaze, even though he's been around for a long time. So, you know, it's, I guess that adds an interesting element to it too, because that was kind of one of the first things I thought is, you know, how didn't they realize this? Because Dennis Williams doesn't seem like a devious guy who's going to be like, all right, let me see if I can slip this one by.
Why were the guys released from the penalty boxes before the shootout?
That's another thing.
That's a good point, and that's what I was thinking of too. But you think of, you know, you think of an end of a game, the horn goes off, the guys are going to leave.
They're going to bring the Zambonis out.
I mean, yeah. And come on, we really shouldn't have to keep the guys in the box just to make sure that they don't go out there. I mean, there should be protocol in there that
I'll bet in the future, I bet for the rest of the season, the CCHA, that is, I would expect it to be enacted. I'd be surprised if it wasn't, to be honest with you.
Really not going to help the referees' causes in a place like Yost, where they rip on them the whole time anyway. Like, you're not perceptive enough that we need to lock these guys in here so that you can keep track of them like we're back in elementary school.
Well, it's an easy way to go.
Yeah, it'll make their jobs easier.
Yeah,
true.
And I think, but I agree with you. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to keep track of, but hey, anything that makes it easier, you might go with it.
Yeah, and maybe Bobby Valentine can get a mustache and glasses, give them to these kids. So, all right. Well, let's. Any final points on that?
No, it's over.
Yeah, that's the other point of this. It is over. Unfortunate that had to happen. Hopefully, at the end of the year, it doesn't have too great an impact on the standings. Playoff positioning, seating, home ice, etc. But we'll see what happens. And again, UNO had their shots, no doubt about it.
So I think this is what is known as a teachable moment.
Yes. So good deal.
I was gonna say, if I'm not mistaken, they had to get an extra attacker goal at the end there, didn't they, to tie it. So, you know, they were trailing as it was, you know, in a game that they should have been trailing. So
they did. Scored with 52 seconds left.
Yep.
Well, let's look ahead to this weekend, which I'm excited for. Three really terrific matchups in CCHA. We'll start with Miami and Michigan. Miami, of course, has been the number one team in the Inch Power Rankings for the last 3 weeks. They are 6-1-1 on the season overall, 3-1-0, and that one loss was an overtime loss to Michigan State. Michigan is 4-2 on the season and 2-0 in the CCHA, currently ranked fourth in the Inch Power Rankings. James, your thoughts on this weekend and a big matchup between Miami and Michigan State?
I think it's a pretty big one for both teams. I mean, Miami got a bit of a test with Michigan State, who's playing extremely well a couple weeks, a couple games. And, Michigan bounced back this weekend, got Caparuso on the score sheet. They've just been having problems. They score 3 goals in a period and then no goals in a period, and they really need to work on their consistency. And I sure hope Miami wasn't watching ESPNU on Halloween, or it might have been the night before when they showed the replay of the national title game as a freaky finish, or ESPN Classic maybe. And, because I got chills watching that. But I think so far it's so good, and it looks like they've left that behind. You know, they've had a couple games where they've given up some late goals and maybe the comeback could have started, but they haven't collapsed. They look like a mature team. They're playing well in all aspects of the game. It should be a good series, and it's going to be important to Miami because, they need to continue against the top-tier team. And it's important to Michigan because, I think that Miami, and at least in my opinion, I kind of thought Miami and Notre Dame were up there at the top and then Michigan be behind, and Notre Dame's maybe faltered a little bit in the beginning. And, if Michigan wants to keep pace with Miami as time goes, as they seem to be the team to beat, this weekend's going to be really important because you got to take those points at home.
Awesome. You mentioned Michigan kind of being uneven offensively. You look at Miami outside of that outside of the series that they played at New Hampshire. They really haven't put up a ton of goals either, which is kind of surprising considering how much talent they have up front. St. Cloud State, I think they had 2 goals. Both of the games, Michigan State, 2 goals, I think, in both of those games. And then this weekend at Northern, they were both 2-1 games. So, Miami obviously is not hitting on all cylinders offensively either. The flip side of that is they've been getting great goaltending from both of the goalies. And Yost has really been a house of horrors for Miami over the years.
Yes.
So, You know, it's not my Michigan offenses that you have to put under the microscope. You assume that those will be fine, and you know, it's which team can stop the other team that's going to prevail. But in this case, we might be looking for the edge in this matchup might be the team that can get a clutch goal or two, because both offenses have, you know, have yet to kind of get their jump start.
Michigan scored 11 last weekend against Lake Superior State, so and you know, Caparuso got going a little bit. So, you know, that's a good sign for Michigan. Now it's a matter of consistency. Can they keep it going against certainly a stronger opponent than they faced last week?
Well, and you know, like you said, the goaltending for Miami's been great, but also you got to look at the defense that they're returning. I mean, Weber and Weidman, those guys, I mean, that's a spectacular defense. Michigan's, for that matter, is extremely deep as well. You know, they had so many defensemen that Scooter Vaughn's playing forward. So, you know, I think you're absolutely right. It's going to be about being opportunistic and getting things at the right time. And then, you know, maybe it's the point where the top guys like Caparuso finally finding his way onto the score sheet last weekend. Is this the weekend he reestablishes himself as a Hobie Baker contender like he was last year?
Yeah. Let's turn to the Great Northwest and Notre Dame visiting Alaska. Wasn't really quite sure what to expect from Alaska after losing Chad Johnson, All-American goalie, but they're unbeaten. 5-0-1 on the season, 2-0-0 in CCHA play. Notre Dame has had a tough early schedule and a couple losses that probably they could regret later in the year, but they're 4-3-1 on the year, 1-0-1 in the league. Alaska hasn't left their home state yet. They made a trip to Anchorage. They haven't been, you know, down into the Continental 48 yet. So we've got Notre Dame and Alaska here. Your thoughts on that series? I guess James will start with you.
I think, you know, this also has a potential to be a great series. We're really lucky we're fortunate to have such great hockey going on this weekend. But Scott Grenham has been unbelievable so far. You know, who would have thought that somebody could step in who only had a handful of games, career experience? Now, mind you, this guy's never lost a game in college hockey. I'm reasonably sure. You know, he came in last year, he stepped in admirably, and he had these stats, but it's a small sample size. You know, can he do it over this? And, you know, now each weekend, you know, he makes you believe a little more. And I had the opportunity to talk to him a couple weeks back, and he seems like a guy with a good head on his shoulders, you know, continuing to work hard. I think that's really his attitude towards the game and work ethic are a microcosm of that Alaska team as a whole. And, you know, I think that Notre Dame will provide a good test for them. Yes, they played Michigan already. But, you know, Notre Dame's a tough physical team. They can move the puck, even though their record doesn't necessarily show it. I think they've played extremely well at times. They've also got good goaltending and good defense. And so I think it'll be a good one. And in this one, unlike the other, the Michigan-Miami series where we're going to look for those elite players to break the game or the opportunistic goals from the third or fourth line, I think, you know, it's really whether Notre Dame's goaltending, you know, primarily Brad Phillips, can stand up toe-to-toe with Scott Grenham, and will Scott Grenham crack, you know, against a more high-pressure team.
Yeah, Ferris is the type of team that looks to, you know, get their three goals and win from there. You know, did I say Ferris?
Yes. Kind of wondering where you were going with that.
I'm in Alaska. I was looking at the opponents last week. So that's what Alaska seems to have going at this point. Plus,
which is interesting because last year they couldn't get three goals.
Yeah.
and I think we put the stat in the order rankings this week. You know, they've got 18 goals, Alaska does, through six games. And, you know, last year they scored 72 goals in 39 games or something like that. So, I mean, their offense is obviously, you know, kicking in a little bit too. So, I don't know what to think of Notre Dame right now. I'm And, you know, it seems like the goaltending is taking a little bit long to kind of situation taking a little bit longer than maybe they expected for it to set up. You know, I would think that they've got to at least platoon at this point in time because Mike Johnson's been really good. And Phillips has been okay. I think he's had some moments where he hasn't been quite as sharp as they wanted him to be. But also, I feel like this team isn't really clicking offensively either. I mean, you know, I expected Notre Dame to have a lot more success offensively than they have thus far.
Yeah.
Now, just on Notre Dame's goaltending there, I think you're right, and I think that they have two very good goaltenders, very skilled goaltenders, and I agree that maybe Phillips hasn't performed up to what, you know, he probably personally expected and what, you know, Notre Dame fans and coaches and us as the media have expected out of him. But, you know, how damaging can that be, you know, in college hockey? Being a Blackhawks fan, you see Chris Ball-Huey go out and struggle for a few games and, you know, read the Riot Act and get rid of him banners all over the United Center. But, you know, it's only, you know, it's only 2, 3, 4, maybe a handful of games. And over the course of an 80-game season, in the NHL, where the playoffs are what really matters, that can do it. But, you know, say Notre Dame's on the brink of a tournament. I mean, how can we discount, you know, some of these losses they've had against potential tournament teams now? And, you know, what do you think the effects of platooning the goalies as they go on? Will it, you know, is it something that works out more often than not, like it did for Miami? Or is it something that can maybe be damaging and screw with the... you know, the psyche of a guy like Brad Phillips, who may be the go-to guy come tournament time, you know, kind of like the Noah Rudin and Billy Sauer situation a few years ago at Michigan.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of time to react. You know, you've got to make calls and kind of go with it. 12 different players have scored at least a goal this year already for Alaska.
And another thing about Phillips, I remember a few years ago when he was a freshman, or a couple of years ago when he was an incoming freshman. You know, I know we had him rated in our recruiting rankings, but the knock on him was maybe that he wasn't, that his focus wasn't quite in line with his with the tool and his physical. And, you know, I don't know, you know, not being at their practices every day, if that's something that's changed. But just kind of thinking back to that, you know, when he was coming into Notre Dame, that was the kind of the one, you know, the one real question mark about him was, you know, his mental preparation and his focus, whether that would catch up with the physical skills that he had.
Well, I guess if the focus isn't there, you can't argue with going with freshman goalies after last year's Frozen.
Yeah. Kidding. Third big CCHA series this weekend, Nebraska-Omaha. We talked a little bit about them earlier. They're at Michigan State, a Michigan State team that's already has six wins on the year. They didn't get their sixth win last season until January. Those games are at Munn Ice Arena in East Lansing. Nebraska-Omaha, 4-0-2 on the season, 1-0-1 in the league. Two clubs off to real nice starts here. I think this is a good test weekend for them as far as the type of competition they've played so far this year. I mean, other than state series at Miami, obviously.
You know, I think they, you know, you have to ask the same question for both teams. Are they for real?
Yep.
You know, are these teams that can contend? Is Michigan State really back? You know, has the off-season stuff that Blaise was trying to do in Omaha with respect to conditioning and being able to play hard for the entire game, is that stuff paying off? And I don't know that this weekend will tell you one way or the other, but I think it could be a pretty exciting series because I think both teams have to be kind of desperate to prove that they are there, you know, especially Michigan State. Because, I mean, that was brutal last year, but you have to give Rick Conley his due for preparing them well over the summer to come out with a good start. And, you know, maybe this weekend will be the weekend that they start to separate themselves as a real contender, or a real contender for first round bye, or, you know, top top 4 or 5 spot in the conference as opposed to competing just to try and get home ice like they were last year.
Yeah, these points are all going to count the same for all three of these series, you know, as they will in January and February. So,
I think the overriding theme of this of the Michigan State Nebraska Omaha series is, you know, you wonder if both of these teams are for real, and if a team you don't know is for real is playing another team that you don't know is for real, I guess we still aren't going to know, but at least it'll be entertaining.
Yeah,
and I think it's got a chance to be a real entertaining series. Michigan State's shown that they can put the puck in the net, and so too has Omaha. Now, you know, obviously that's the kind of style that, you know, really both of these coaches, Dean Blaze and Rick Conley, you know, neither guy is really a trap kind of guy. They drag it out the goals. It could be. I see it being an entertaining series, and you know, of the three series that we've kind of highlighted, this one seems like it has a split written all over it, maybe more so than the other two. But I think it's going to be fun for fans. Just a hunch, but I think it could be a real real entertaining series.
Yeah, it should be a good one. Go ahead.
I was going to say, oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to wrap this thing up.
Oh, I was just going to say, I got to give advantage Michigan State, I think, going into this one. They played pretty well at Miami, and like we said about Omaha, you know, they had their chances against a Bowling Green team who hopefully is on the rebound, but really hasn't shown much sign of it yet. So that's my 2 cents.
Yeah, that'll do it. Bus, any final comments?
Let's get to Thursday. I'm ready for this. I'm ready for these guys to start playing.
Yeah. James?
That's it. I'm excited. Good weekend of hockey. Look forward to seeing what the outcomes are.
Good deal. Well, that'll do it for our special little CCHA edition of the Inch Podcast. We'll be back soon with another look at what's going on around the rest of the country, but wanted to weigh in on these issues and these big series as we look forward to this weekend of college hockey. Thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.